everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Before I get started with my guest today, I want to tell you about a couple books that have released this week. Michael Williams released A Fall in Autumn. I love that title. Jane Risden released Undercover Crime Shorts. Samuel Gailey from Ocean View released The Guilt We Carry. Carrie Dalby released Perilous Confessions. Josh Pachter, who's amazing, released Amsterdam Noir. Amy Hicks, the most darling author I know, released Dark Streets, Cold Suburbs, another great title. Eric Beatner, All the Way Down. David Putnam, The Reckless. Ashley Knight co-wrote with David Wood. The book is called Herald. I hope you stop by and check that out. And then Marie Benedict wrote The Only Woman in the Room about Hedy Lamarr. It's an interesting book. I hope you get a chance to look it over. My guest today is known to his friends as Sean, but he is author S.A. Cosby. Sean and I have been social media buddies for a long time. We met at BoucherCon in person. He is one of the nicest and friendliest men it's ever been my pleasure to meet. His new book is called My Darkest Prayer. Reviews are coming in all over, but let me tell you some of them. John Land, who is just quite a thriller writer himself, and an old friend said that it was a brilliant and bracing slice of postmodern crime noir spiced with a ton of action. You can't beat that. Your prayers for a greater thriller have been answered. Eric Beatner said, rarely have I read a debut book so self-assured. Eric Pruitt, one of my favorite people, said, Sean Cosby enters the crime fiction arena first, splintering open the door and announcing his presence with a resounding crash. High praise coming from Eric. Tommy Pluck said that Sean Cosby is a natural-born storyteller. And Sean Riley Simmons said, wow, this book is a quick punch to the gut. I'm thrilled to welcome my friend, Sean S.A. Cosby, to the show. Sean, welcome to Authors on the Air, and thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to join you.
I am thrilled to have you. I've been, waiting and waiting for My Darkest Prayer to come out. I want to talk about this book right off the bat, because when I read your bio, there seemed to be so much crossover between your real life and your fiction. do you base a lot of your writing influences on your own personal influences?
Yeah, I think there's a quote that I can't remember who the originator is, but it's a quote that goes that, writing a lot of times is about yourself turned up to 11. And a lot of my writing is basically things that either have happened in my life or to people in my life, or experiences that I've shared with people in my life, and then just taking them and stirring them up and turning them all the way up to give them a dramatic and narrative urgency. And so a lot of things that are in my writing or in my books are events inspired by actual events or stories that I heard or things that happened to people that I'm friends with or close with. And so I think the trick is, when you do that, is you can tell an interesting story to your buddy or your best friend over a beer, but the trick is to taking it and making it relatable to anyone who might pick up the book. And so that's where the magic happens, so to speak.
You display a lot of passion of emotion with your character, Nathan Waymaker, who is kind of, it seems to be, everybody's pal. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, I think Nathan is an amalgamation of people that I know and people I grew up with. And he's also my blatant attempt at a classical pulp noir hero through a different prism, if that makes sense. He's inspired by people, characters, I should say. They're people to me because they seem so real. But he's inspired by characters like Travis McGee and Easy Rawlins,
right,
and to a lesser extent, maybe Jack Reacher and folks like that.
Sure.
a traditional pulp noir hero, but just a little bit country, a little bit Southern fried, through an African American or a marginalized person's perspective. And so the character as I envision him and the way people seem to be responding to him is exactly as you said. He can be everybody's friend. He's easygoing. He doesn't want trouble, but like in the classic sense, he can handle trouble if it comes along.
I can definitely relate to him as a Travis McGee type. You said something really interesting about marginalized or persons of color characters. You were a huge reader as a kid growing up. We were talking about mm-hmm. in the green room. You read a lot mm-hmm. of books, sometimes, you know, a couple hundred a year. And for a teenager, mm-hmm. that's pretty impressive because most boys at 13 years old are out running around with their friends and doing mm-hmm. what new teenagers normally do. were there writers then of color who influenced you, or were there just not that many? I mean, everybody talks about Walter Mosley, you know, because right. he's been around for so long. But Walter, his characters are kind of noirish, but I don't know mm-hmm. if we could call them that necessarily. He's a crime fiction writer, I think. Maybe not. What's mm-hmm. your thought on that?
I think, like as you said, if you talk to my mom, she'll tell you I've been reading since I was four. I doubt the veracity of that story, but she loves telling it. But I started reading really early, and I started just reading what was available. We grew up really, really poor. And so one of my favorite things was that every once in a while we'd go down to the local thrift store. And at this thrift store, they had a bin. And in this bin, people just donate their old paperbacks. And you could get like 10 for a dollar. And I'm kind of dating wow. myself how old I am. But you could just, and so it was an amount, it was an incredible eclectic mix of stuff. And so I read everything. I read, you know, Agatha Christie. I read Dorothy L. Sayers. I read, James A. Michener, you know, his huge
oh, yeah.
books are like doorstops and stuff like that.
Yes,
and,
they
but
are.
I also, I was able to read books. By Zora Neale Hurston, and I was able to read books by Alice Walker and John Edgar Wideman and some African-American writers that, not necessarily crime writers, but writers who were writing about experiences that I shared or I was familiar with. And so later on, I found out about, you know, of course, like you said, like Walter Mosley and another great writer, John Ridley, who mm-hmm. a lot of folks, I don't know why he doesn't get enough attention, but you know, he wrote the script for a screenplay for 12 Years a Slave. His early
yep.
noir crime stuff is very dark, but also very funny. And so I was kind of shaped by those writers and those experiences. But and I've talked about this with other folks. There weren't a lot of African-American or writers of color writing about the experiences that I was having as an African-American person in the South. It just
why
wasn't.
Why do you think that is? Let's talk about this, because at BoucherCon this year, we were honored by the winners who talk specifically about being writers or editors of color. They swept
mm-hmm.
all the awards. Kelly
mm-hmm.
Garrett gave an amazing speech.
I love
and
Kelly Garrett.
Oh my God, is she not the coolest woman in the world?
She's an incredible
person. She really is, and she really is leading the charge for
mm-hmm.
for African American and others who are not white bred
mm-hmm.
writers
right.
to become more popular. So why is it only recently, and I mean recently, maybe 10 or 20 years, that we're hearing stories like you said about the experience you have as an African American man in the South? Why do you think that is?
I think there has been a movement in the last 20 to 25 years of voices, specifically, I think, marketed to what we call, I guess, you know, the advertising speak or the marketing speak, urban markets. And you've had
yeah.
Writers like Carl Weber and Omar Tyree and Eric Jerome Dickey and the late Elin Harris who were writing crime-adjacent novels or novels that had rough characters, I guess. But they were all based in cities. They were all based in Chicago, Philly, New York. And I think, and I've talked about this with other writers, my personal opinion is I think it was difficult for writers in those areas or to come up with stories or to be able to effectively tell a story about specifically African Americans or people of color or marginalized people in the South. Because up to recently, your characters didn't have freedom of movement because you didn't have freedom of movement. You know, I use this analogy. If you write a story about moonshiners in 1946 in the South, and they're gentlemen who happen to be white, and they've had a run-in with a competing moonshiner, and they've got his body in the back of a truck under a tarp, you can create suspense by them driving through town trying to get this body out of town. Because, are they going to get stopped? Are they going to get away with it? So on and so forth. If you write that same story about two black guys, they're going to get stopped. They're not going to get through town. They might even have a body in the back of the truck. And so I think it was difficult to see the way in to tell those stories. But I think it's changed because I think those voices are being heard from all corners now. And I think that African Americans and LGBTQ and women from the South, from the North, from the Midwest, not just the urban centers, but the vast majority of the whole country are telling their stories, and people are finally wanting to promote those stories and are wanting to listen to them.
I love to read just like you do. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when I'm reading, if there's a particularly detailed description of a character, I will try to place an image of that character in my mind. As mm-hmm. you're reading, no matter who it is you're reading, do you envision the character as either white, black, Asian, or whatever, if it's not mentioned to you?
If it's not mentioned, I think my default is to think the character is more like me than not. I mean, now, it depends. I mean, if I'm reading a story, say, for instance, if I'm reading Elmore Leonard, which Elmore Leonard is, the master of crime fiction. But his descriptions are really scant. He doesn't go into great detail, aqua blue eyes or, pale alabaster skin. That's not really his thing. And so a lot of times when I would read his stuff, Stick, Ryan's Rules and Stick.
Right.
When I was reading it, I kind of defaulted to thinking Stick kind of maybe looked like my uncle. But I think that's natural. I think that's everybody's inclination. I think once you read the book,
You know, now that you said that, I'm thinking of the movie Get Shorty, which John Travolta played, and it was very, very mm-hmm. good. It was a great movie. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking mm-hmm. Idris Elba could have easily played that role, and it would have been just mm-hmm. as believable and probably just as much fun, maybe even more so. So I never looked at it like that. So I'm going to have to change up my color palette. I'll admit that I don't usually give it a lot of thought, but it's worth keeping in mind what you're saying. You have a default mm-hmm. character setting. How mm-hmm. funny is that? That's really interesting. I want to talk about My Darkest Prayer. Mm-hmm. Tell me about Nathan and a little bit about this story, and let's see how it. Let's kind of unpack it a little bit and talk about what's happening with him. What kind of a man is Nathan?
Nathan is a very contemplative man, for lack of a better word, a fun-loving man. He enjoys life. He enjoys, he likes to go out with his friends. He likes to have a drink. He loves people. He likes women. But I think all of that is a crutch for him because he's also someone who's been through some severe damaging experiences. He's a military vet. At the beginning of the book, both his parents have been dead for a few years, and they died under, I wouldn't say mysterious, but unfortunate circumstances. He's someone who has a lot of anger, a lot of rage inside about, the way his life, some things that have happened in his life. He's the product of an interracial relationship. His father's white and his mother's black, and so he talks a lot about, I talk a lot about in the book how sometimes he feels adrift in society, and he's very loyal to friends that are loyal to him because of that. And so as the book begins, he's also a former deputy, and we learn that he has quit the police force rather vociferously because they refused to investigate a road rage incident which claimed his mother and father's life. And so as the book begins, the only job he can get is working for his cousin, who has a funeral home. He's sort of a Guy Friday. He's not a funeral director. He's not licensed by the state or anything. He's basically just a maintenance man / body removal expert. And so as the story begins, he's doing that, but he's garnered a reputation in town, much like a Travis McGee-style character, that he will help people from time to time when they feel like no one else will help, when they feel like the police aren't paying attention to them, or maybe matters where they, you know, feel like they can't go to the police. I make mention in the beginning of the book that he helped a character off scene, you know, get his daughter out of a drug den. And so that's basically, he's garnered that kind of reputation. It's not something he advertises. He's not a PI, but also, much like Easy Rawlins, he kind of finds himself falling into these circumstances. And so as the book begins, he finds himself asked to kind of poke around the death of a local minister by members of the minister's congregation. And that's how the story begins.
You know, this story, the character and the surroundings, and like you're talking about, is a lot of anger about unsolved crimes and all, reminds me a lot, and I will compare it honestly to Joe Ide's IQ, Isaiah Quintave.
Mm-hmm.
And because I love that character and I love Joe, he's a great guy.
That's a wonderful
you have
book too.
Oh my God, all three of them are amazing. So so that's how I kind of look at Nathan. He's kind of like an older IQ, because Isaiah is a younger man who is angry because his brother was murdered and no one has done anything about it. He's kind of the local go-to guy to figure things out. So, you know, you're definitely writing a character that's very, very interesting. This is the first time we're learning about Nathan. Will we see him again, do you think?
I hope so, because I really enjoyed writing him. I really, I'll tell you a real quick story about the background of this book. So back in 2011, I got my first paying crime story published. I tried to write I've always wanted to write, and I kind of bounced around trying to find my niche. A lot of people don't know this, but I wrote a fantasy novel back in 2009 that didn't do that great. I love writing horror stories. I wrote a lot of short stories, and I just wasn't catching my stride. I wasn't clicking with anything. And so I wrote a crime story because a friend of mine had gone to New York and she'd ran into Todd Robinson, who used to publish Thug Lit. And during the conversation, he had told her, I'm always looking for new writers. And she had passed it along to me. I wrote a story and he published it. And Todd and I became friends over the course of the years. And I actually got to travel to New York and we got to talking. And he said, you know, in that indomitable Todd Robinson, New York, Brooklyn, by way of Boston accent, you know, when are you going to write a long book? When are you going to actually write a book, not a story? And I said, you know, I don't know. I've been trying to think of a way, man. And I made this point. I said, you know, where I come from in the country, it's never a who done it. It's a can you prove it? And he said, well, don't you work at a funeral home? And which I do. My day job is working at a funeral home. And I said, yeah. He said, you got a ready-made story right there. And something about the way he said it clicked with me. And so the story the light came on, and I wrote the first three chapters longhand. And when I got home, I finished the book. And so I like Nathan. I think he was my attempt, like I said, to kind of codify the heroes and protagonists that I enjoyed growing up, but take those heroes and put them through a circumstance and put them in circumstances, I should say, that were familiar to me. And like I tell people, this story is a love letter to where I grew up. It's a love letter to Virginia. It's a love letter to the culture and the community that I grew up in. You know, when you love something, it doesn't mean that you are totally oblivious to its flaws. I'm totally understanding that where I grew up at and where I live, the South, it's a place of, it can be a place of startling beauty, and it can also be a place of incredible pain. And so I tried to put all of that in the book. And so hopefully, if the book does well, I have more stories I'd like to tell with Nathan, and more things and more places and more adventures I'd like to go.
We talked earlier that you're also a fan of horror, which is, I think, it probably is the closest thing to noir crime fiction that I hear most authors talking about, that they all really like it a lot. Do you think at some point you'd like to try your hand at that?
I would. A writer who's a great writer and a great friend of mine, Ed Kurtz, has said, he's got his quote where he says, you know, horror and crime are kissing cousins. And I think that's true. I really do. And I think you could write a crime story that has horrific elements, and you can write a horror story that has crime elements. And, you know, Stephen King is, you know, probably one of the more famous people that does that sometimes. And I'd love to write a horror story sometime. I'd love to write a horror novel. I have a couple ideas rattling around. I don't know. We'll see how things go. See what happens with my career. But I would love to do something that touches on the more, abject aspects of a horror story. Maybe still wrapped within a crime novel skin, or perhaps just going straight for a horror genre type tale. But I definitely was something that interests me a lot.
Tell me about Brotherhood of the Blade, Volume 1.
Brotherhood of the Blade was a fantasy novel that I wrote in conjunction with a writing cooperative here in Virginia. So really great group of people that we were working together to try to get our try to help each other get our books published. And it's a fantasy novel basically about a young man who finds out that he is heir to a centuries-old warrior tradition where two camps, one representing the good in men or humankind and one representing the bad or the evil in humankind, fight a duel every 100 years to determine the fate of the world. And it was really a lot of fun to write. It was my kind of attempt at combining a lot of different genres that I like martial arts films and sword and sorcery films and fantasy novels and urban fantasy novels and fantasy epics. And it was really a lot of fun to write, and I really enjoyed it. And it did all right. It was independent. It was an independent book sold through Amazon, and I hustled it around a lot of sci-fi conventions for a number of years trying to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually wrote a volume 2, and it came out, and like I said, it did well. A lot of people liked it. I didn't get the same feeling that I got when I sat down to write a crime novel. I just wasn't able to immerse myself in it the way I did when I started really getting serious about crime books.
Yeah, you said earlier that My Darkest Prey is kind of an amalgamation of your experiences that have poured over into the book, and I think sometimes that's what makes a difference. You've got great reviews on Brotherhood of the Blade, but
mm-hmm.
you've got some serious stuff going on with My Darkest Prayer. And, you know, it's going all through social media. Your book is the big talk of social media on new noir crime fiction. So congratulations on that.
Thank you so much. It means so much.
You're welcome. Oh, yeah, I'm thrilled to have you on here. Sean, when you sit down to write, what's the most important thing that has to be in front of you for you to begin writing? You know, what do you pull out of your writer's toolbox that you have to have every time? Is it peace and quiet, a cup of coffee, music?
Oh, that's a good question.
You know? Yeah.
Music. Music is the main thing because music inspires the rhythm of the way I write. And what I mean is, like, if I'm writing, it sounds kind of cheesy, but if I'm writing a fight scene or an action scene, I've got either some hard rock or some hard R&B, or hard hip hop or something aggressive, as my friend likes to call it, angry young man music. If I'm writing a more sensitive scene, I have something like kind of jazzy, maybe some Thelonious Monk or Dexter Gordon or something playing like that. And if I'm writing something that is kind of funny or supposed to be sort of funny, I have something a little more poppy playing. But music helps me. When I write, I like to write, especially my dialogue, I like to write dialogue that has like a staccato rhythm back and forth between two characters. And so
I like that too.
I
like that style of dialogue, by the way. It's fun because you're not dragged down by extra words. And
right.
if the writer has done it the right way, you'll know who's talking. You know, which two people or even three people are talking because their syntax and dialect and tone and timbre is just a little bit different. So kudos to you for doing that. It makes a faster paced book too, don't you think?
I think so. I think it drives the narrative a lot.
Yeah.
More too, especially whether, and I think that's regardless whether you're using first person or omniscient narrator. If you can make sure that people know who each character is without dialogue tags, then I think you're tapping into what makes a good scene, in my opinion.
Yeah, I like that very much. I just finished two books that did that really well. And because one of my speed bumps when I'm reading is if the character, no matter if it's male or female, two females or two men, if they sound exactly alike and I don't know who the hell is talking, I put the book down. Because to me, that's someone who's not read their own dialogue. And and when dialogue is that fast and that's, like you said, snappy and it crackles like that, I want to read it out loud. So to me, that's really, really important. And kudos to you for doing that. Do you write every day, Sean?
I'd like to say I do, because like I said, one of my heroes is Stephen King, and he often one of his famous quotes that the only day he doesn't write is Christmas and his birthday.
Right.
I can't, just because of the way my schedule is. I try to write at least 5 days a week. I try to write at least either Monday through Friday or Tuesday through Saturday or whatever, and I end up usually I get close. I usually end up writing 6 days a week. But if I'm in the middle of, like right now, I'm in between projects. I finished My Darkest Prayer a while back. Of course, it's out now. The second novel that's not affiliated with My Darkest Prayer that's being shopped around, cross fingers. And so right now I'm just in the beginning stages of a third standalone work. And so I've been doing a lot of what I like to call foundation building, doing a little bit of research.
Sure.
The way I write is and this is the way it has worked for me so far. I like to write a long synopsis. I don't believe in – I don't do outline. I'm not in the pants versus outline debate. Like,
right.
Are you a pantser or are you outline? I like to write a long synopsis, and then if I can see a possible ending, then I can start the book. Doesn't always end, the ending is not always the one that was in the synopsis, but if I can see where the story is possibly going to go, then I feel like I can get into the book. Because to me, writing a story, it's like finding a open door in a house. You know, once I know that I can go in this way, then I can work with it. And so a lot of times, even if I'm not writing an actual, sitting down writing a chapter, I'll write sketches. I'll write character biographies just that I'm going to see. Nobody's ever going to see them. They're not going to make it into the book. But they help me kind of figure out who the characters are. And so I'll
the foundation of your book is based on your characters, so I understand that. You know, it's kind of like saying, okay, I'm going to leave the house and go somewhere. That's all well and good, but if you kind of narrow it down and say, I'm going to go to a restaurant, then you have your choices there. So I understand what you're saying. It makes a lot of sense. Tell everybody where they can find you if they're looking for you on social media.
All right. You can go on Facebook and find me under S.A. Cosby Author. I have an author's page there that's updated at least every day with new information about me, upcoming projects, cool things that have happened to me in this writing journey. I post reviews, good reviews, obsessively. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'll tell you on Twitter, I curse a lot, but I'm also kind of funny. But I also do the same thing there. I post a lot of information about my writing, and I also try to signal boost writers that I feel that also friends of mine are writers that I feel aren't getting enough attention, and they return the favor, so I appreciate that. I'm in the process of creating a website, which I know I'm way behind on that. I'm behind the curve, but I'm working on it. So those are my main two places, and I have a poor, dusty, neglected blog that I need to get back to called The Walking Book at WordPress.com.
You know, Sean, it's been a real pleasure having you on. I'm going to be looking at reading books from a different perspective because of the things you said today, and I want to tell you how much I appreciate that. Will you come back when your next book comes out, or will you choose a writer of color or a marginalized writer who you absolutely like and come back and interview them on this show?
I would definitely love to, and that's definitely something that would interest me greatly. So that's definitely something that could be in the works. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so you and I are going to talk about that further, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Certainly.
All right. Thank you very much, author S.A. Cosby, also known as Sean to his friends. The book is My Darkest Prayer. Please go to Amazon and check him out. I promise you won't be disappointed with this book. Sean, thank you for being with me today. I really appreciate it. And Happy New Year, my friend.
Thank you for having me, and Happy New Year to you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All righty. Thank you. Bye-bye. And
bye-bye.
That's our show for today, friends. Thanks for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad. See you later.